Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? Can you believe it? It's season 4 already.
I can believe it because the holidays were an absolute blur.
I know, right? Well, welcome back, Tech It to the Limit listeners, to season 4. We're so grateful to have you, and I'm so grateful to be here with you, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm grateful to be here with you. And thanks, listeners, for making us part of your New Year's resolution for 2026 to listen to more health tech humorous podcasts. Really appreciate that. So to kick things off for our season opener, we have not one, but two experts on the show. We have Danielle Thiel and Dr. Arkel Georgiou. Danielle is a patient, and she also works at Mayo Clinic in the Joy program. She's a TV correspondent. She is the most amazing, kind soul that I personally have ever met. And then Dr. Arkel Georgiou is a podcast host herself. She hosts Speak Up for Your Health. She's a patient advocate, former healthcare executive, and advisor to lots of really big companies and stuff. So they are going to have a conversation about the most important person in the room, the patient.
Yeah,
nice try. On occasion, it is you, Elliot, but no.
When I go to a doctor's office, it is.
Yes, you probably think this song is about you. Anyway, really excited, listeners, to bring you our very first, but hopefully not our last, episode focused on elevating the patient voice in healthcare technology. Yeah, so, but you know, before we get down to that, I feel like we need a moment to just reflect on something really important. Do you know what that is? What did you get for the holidays?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God, froze. Hopefully you got a new Zoom camera or dial-up modem.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to buy it for myself. What did I get for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to hear, what is your techiest gift that you received in 2025?
My techiest gift.
You know, could be, an analog watch or maybe a Tamagotchi.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I think the techiest, hottiest gift that I got, I actually got a green screen backdrop holder. It's like a fold up green screen thing that I can put behind me on all of my calls. And so I can.
So I don't have to look at your accolades anymore.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
So that was, I think, the pottiest kind of gift I got. But the nerdiest gift was a retro handheld arcade game.
Okay, that's wicked. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
40,000 games on it. It is every arcade game, Nintendo game, Atari game, PlayStation game, Sega game, Nintendo GameCube, N64.
Okay, stop bragging.
It's got Z buttons on the back.
Is Roller Coaster Tycoon on that? Because if it is, I'm going to hate you.
That was a PC game. It might not be.
I know, right?
Yeah. But Turtles in Time. Yeah. X-Men. Yeah. Ms. Pac-Man. You better
believe it. Street Fighter?
Absolutely. Oh, one God. N4.
I love that game.
Marvel versus Capcom. I mean, they're all in there, as well as some of my favorites. The original Zelda, Super Mario 3. Everything is in here. You can even play some GoldenEye if you were really into it. This was from my husband. He knows me far too well.
GoldenEye, amazing game. Terrible Bond movie. Just going to put that out there. So bad. I watched it over the holidays. I was like, I remember this being better.
Yeah. Well, a lot of things from the 90s we remember as being better.
Right?
What about you?
Techiest gift that I received. I'm pretty analog in real life, if you can believe it. So the techiest gift that I received was actually from the show. And I got this wicked hoodie. What? It says Tech It to the Limit. Does yours just go, bop, bop? That's cool.
What?
Yeah.
My heart's beating for you.
Of course it is. And for the show. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked about my Tech It to the Limit hoodie. And if we want to call it tech, it's kind of more manual, but I got myself a SodaStream, and you go, ksh, 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 like 10 times and you have bubbly water. It's fantastic.
That sounds awesome. I love that you're analog in your life. Literally, one of my goals for 2026 is find analog time. So I have stopped wearing my smartwatch during the day because I don't need my watch buzzing every time I get a text message or an email, or like it just distracts me and it breaks my concentration. So I love that you're analog in real life.
I can't believe I forgot to mention this. My kids got a landline. I gave them a landline as a holiday gift. Yeah. And it's called a tin can phone and it runs off a Wi-Fi signal. They can call any number. And it was so fun watching them discover like the phone cord and watching my son like twist it around his finger while he was talking to somebody on the phone. I was like, ah, precious mems.
Love that. That's really cool. I got my daughter a CD player.
Oh my God. We are such elder millennials. CD player. Good Lord. Does she have Napster?
Yeah, right. I want her to know what it's like to own media. She doesn't know what it's like to own any media. Right. Mm. And I also want her to get her lost in an album. You know, something by Queen. Anyway.
Or a mixtape, you know.
Mixtapes. So lessons learned, get analog, right?
Get
digital
analog.
Is so passe. And before we have our amazing guests come on and join us, Sarah, I think we've got a new game to kick us off in 2026. What do we got?
Yeah, being that Danielle and Arkell are going to talk about the patient journey specific to breast cancer, which was Danielle's diagnosis, we're going to take a quick dive into some of the most impressive technology in the oncology space that's out there right now, because cancer care is changing fast and sometimes it feels like the future has already arrived with some of these products. Tell our listeners, what are we calling this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're calling this this game Trial Ready or Try Again Oncology Mission. So we're going to spotlight what's real, what's game changing, and maybe what still belongs in a sci-fi pitch deck is like a holodeck kind of thing on Star Trek.
Right. So to that point, Elliot, you're going to be in the hot seat and I'm going to be quizzing you because you have bragged before about being the Ken Jennings Jeopardy champion, for those of you who don't follow him, of healthcare technology. And it's time to put that to the test. Are you ready?
I feel like,
Elliot,
I'm really being set up to fail here. But yes. All right. Let's go. Let's do it. I don't know what's coming.
Welcome, listeners, and Elliot, our one contestant to Trial Ready or Try Again, the 90s nostalgia edition. Let's see if you can tell which of these oncology innovations, Elliot, are the real deal and which ones belong in a Beanie Bag garage sale. Okay, so I'm going to read you a scenario and you're going to let me know if you think it is trial ready, meaning it's real, it's true, actual company, or try again, it's fake. Okay? All right, first up, Clarity Breast. No, not a Lisa Frank sticker pack, but an AI tool that predicts a woman's 5-year breast cancer risk using only a mammogram. Basically, it's a magic 8-ball for mammos. Is that trial ready or try again?
Calculates 5-year risk based off of most recent mammogram.
Yep.
Trial ready.
Excellent. Ding, 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 ding. Clarity Breast, for our listeners' sake, is an FDA de novo authorized AI platform that predicts a woman's 5-year risk of developing breast cancer using only a screening mammogram. It outputs a percentage probability based on mammography features intended for risk stratification beyond traditional approaches. So pretty sweet. Thank you, Clarity team. All right, next one, round two. Are you ready?
Yes, hit me.
Oncotune frequency therapy. Patients wear noise-canceling headphones that emit tumor-disrupting sound waves calibrated to the molecular vibration of cancer cells. Think Spotify Wrapped, but for your malignancy. Is it trial ready or try again? I'm laughing because you're laughing. It's not a giveaway.
I'm going to go. I just have like visions of people going to the spa and sitting on those like vibrating chairs and
right.
And
they're like in the 50s, they're shaking your fat with the belt.
I'm like melting my tumor away. I'm going to go with try again.
Yeah, try again. No additional information provided, listeners, because it's vibes based oncology. The FDA was not invited. So nothing more to share.
Yeah, vibe space oncology.
Okay, I think we're on three. How about this one, Elliot? A company claims their AI can match patients to clinical trials faster than Napster could serve up a bootleg MP3. Is it trial ready or try again? The company is called Outcomes for Me. Let me know if you need me to use it in a sentence.
Can you give me the origin of the... I'm going to go trial ready.
Excellent choice. Outcomes for Me positions itself as a direct-to-patient care cancer platform that provides personalized treatment options and clinical trial matching with guidance based on NCCN guidelines. A core value prop is helping patients and clinicians find relevant options faster and have more informed conversations.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think that's really awesome. I think the next value prop needs to be actually getting in them in to see those people.
Yeah. Cloning humans. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a great, handy little tool. Probably really good for distributed clinical trials too.
Okay, round four. Oncopets VR. Patients hang out in virtual reality with avatars of supportive animals that supposedly reduce tumor stress. Imagine Clippy from Microsoft Word, but it's a golden retriever saying, "It looks like you're trying to fight cancer."
Ooh, I was almost at trial ready right up until that last little bit.
Right?
So I'm going to have to go try again. But like VR therapy for a pet sounds viable.
I know, right? Maybe we should just quit this whole pod thing and start our own VR business. I don't know. Sounds
but
crazy.
Try again.
I think it's not a fully baked idea, at least not one that's market ready. So you are 4-for-4, my friend. This is the final round, okay? We're going to go with a big pharma use case here. Bayer is partnering with Kumquat Biosciences to target the KRAS G12D mutation, a famously tough nut to crack. I know kumquat sounds like a Capri Sun flavor, but this is a billion-dollar play. Already or try again?
It named names with Bayer. I'm going to go with trial ready.
Boom! 5-for-5! Undefeated! Elliot Wilson storms the field or something. Fans right. Elliot Wilson storm the field. Bayer and Kumquat Biosciences announced an exclusive global license and collaboration to develop and commercialize this KRAS G12D inhibitor, with Kumquat running early phase 1A and Bayer taking later development commercialization. This KRAS, God, it sounds like a radio call sign, G12D, is a major precision oncology target, especially relevant across pancreatic, colorectal, and lung cancers. Mm. So thank you, Bayer Kumquat, the most delicious Capri Sun flavor yet.
That's right. That's amazing.
Elliot, you did live up to your Ken Jennings bragging rights, so I will zip my lips.
Yeah, awesome. I think that's the best I've ever done on one of these games. But Sarah, that was so exciting. It was so exciting. I don't know if I just played trial ready or try again, or I just finished binging TMNT with my daughter. That's how awesome I'm feeling right now. I don't know what's what.
But that's the point, you know, Elliot, in oncology, separating hype from hope can be tricky. It's why we need excitement in the space and conversations in the space. And that's why we're bringing on patient voices like Danielle and Arkell to keep us honest today. So stick around, listeners. We'll be right back. This episode of Tech It to the Limit is proudly, not actually, sponsored by Glitchy, the first immersive telehealth simulator designed to answer one simple question. What if healthcare leaders had to use the tech they approve? With Glitchy, executives, product managers, and well-meaning innovators can finally experience care the patient way, where audio cuts out right when you say your symptom, when video freezes on your least flattering face, when the password reset fails again. And just when you think you're done, surprise bell, you're welcome. Glitchy features hyper-realistic modes like, can you hear me now? Wrong portal, right problem. And the fan favorite, we'll call you back. Spoiler alert, we won't. Perfect for leadership retreats, product launches, and anyone who's ever said, the tech is fine, patients just need training. Use promo code YOURRX for LOL at checkout to receive 10% off, one free humility upgrade, and zero actual technical support. Glitchy, because if you wouldn't tolerate it as a patient, don't ship it. Warning, use of Glitchy may result in heightened empathy, radical accountability, and portals that actually work. Welcome back, listeners. Today's guests on the season four opener of Tech It to the Limit are two of my favorite humans. They require no introduction, but we're going to give them one anyway. We're going to kick things off with Danielle Teal, who is a kindness crusader. She's a card-carrying kindness crusader. I can vouch for that. A TV correspondent, Mayo Clinic Joy Program champion, and founder of Caring Acts of Kindness Everywhere. Danielle is also presently navigating a breast cancer diagnosis with equal parts grit, grace, and humor. And she's here to spill the tea on how healthcare technology can either be your BFF or your worst frenemy. And with Danielle today, we have Dr. Arkel Georgiou, a physician, author, former healthcare executive, and nationally recognized health advocate who spent her career translating medical complexity into real-world clarity. She's the host of her very own podcast, Speak Up for Your Health, which I highly recommend. She's also the creator of the CARES decision-making model and a relentless champion for patient empowerment. Here to unpack how data, design, and a little self-advocacy can turn healthcare from overwhelming to actually workable. Welcome, Danielle and Arkel. May I call you Danielle and Arkel?
Yes. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, let's kick off this conversation with a little fun. Tech It to the Limit listeners are used to this by now. We always ask our guests to share their favorite dad joke, be they dads or be they not. So Danielle, do you have a dad joke you want to share with our listeners?
I do have a dad joke. I'm going to call it a mom joke because, you know, why do the football team go to the bank?
Football team go to the bank.
Think about the Vikings. Think about, you know, all the football teams. Why did they go to the bank?
They wanted their quarterback.
Yes.
Hear that before. Nice one, Elliot.
Did you hear that before? Did you use co-pilot?
No. You gotta find the pun in everything.
That's Elliot, my motto. King of puns.
Mm-hmm. I do have two small children, and love a good, they're starting to groan at good dad jokes, which means I'm doing my job right.
Well, I love that one, Danielle. Thank you. Arkel, do you have one to share with our listeners?
I do. So what did the sushi say to the bumblebee?
Oh my gosh, these are so good.
Is it B-roll?
That was good. How about let's roll, B.
What to the bumblebee?
Wasabi.
Wasabi.
Okay.
That's good.
Oh my gosh. Okay. What a way to kick off season one.
Okay, there we go.
Love it. Oh, wow. Thank you so much. Well, this is our patient advocacy focused episode. And I think the best place to start, Danielle, is with you and your lived experience. I'm wondering, can you take us back to that moment that you received your diagnosis and share with us a bit about that and to your comfort and how specifically with respect to this show, how technology kind of showed up immediately in your journey, whether it was for the good or for the ill?
So that's a really good question. Thank you so much. And I will say I'm an open book, very transparent. I've been very public about my journey because I want to take people along with me. And also really advocate, you know, that early detection saves lives. So rewind back to December 5th, I was doing a self-exam. I had been doing them every month, which I'm thankful for because I noticed a change and I found a lump in my right breast. Immediately, I sent a portal message, technology, to my physician saying, hey, I found a lump. I need to be seen. I had an appointment by December 9th to see my primary physician. And 2 days later, I was at the breast cancer clinic getting the imaging for the mammogram as well as an ultrasound. And when I was in the ultrasound, the radiologist came in and said, you know, hey, we need to, you know, take more images. And I asked him the question, should I be concerned? And I think when you have a situation where you're constantly being kind of prodded and checked by the technical people and then the physicians, you know something's wrong, right? If they need more imaging and having the experts come in and all that stuff. So I started to get worried and they said they would like to do a biopsy, that it was actually a couple of lumps, which turned out to be one big mass, as well as my lymph node was swollen. And I had not even felt the lymph node was swollen. So next thing you know, I was getting a biopsy. And I was leaving there about noon and I came home. One of my very good friends came home with me and we waited for the results. I was told it was invasive lobular carcinoma And I received the results in my portal as well, which was super helpful because I could review it and read through it. But I had no idea what that meant. And immediately I wondered if I was going to die. What was really incredible was technology really did show up in support, like an assistant to my providers and care team, in that as soon as I was diagnosed formally with invasive lobular carcinoma, which is, you know, a pretty aggressive breast cancer, the stage that, or the type that I have, I opened my portal the very next day and boom, all these appointments showed up on my portal. I was immediately seen for scans. I was immediately seen, you know, by my care team. They went through every possible aspect that comes to your care with breast cancer and the diagnosis. It was incredible. And we can talk more about the human connection component and the technology part, but I appreciated being able to digest all of this through technology because I was in so much shock. I needed to be able to see it to actually be able to review it. But that human connection with my care team was key as well.
Was there a moment, and this is something I've heard from others, and I've experienced it myself, with my own results that I get back from an imaging study or something like that, was your provider able to beat the results to you?
Unfortunately, no, but I was kind of glad, and everybody's different, right? Like it's case by case as far as experience goes. For me, I was thankful that I was able to review the results and let myself fall apart so that I could put myself back together before my kids saw me. I think that that was key to being able to navigate the rest of that day and every day moving forward. But I think about that day and I had it just fall apart. And that allowed me the space and time to do so. And I was prepared to have a conversation with my physician later that day when we were able to have a conversation.
Technology enabling a very human need, a cathartic need.
Yeah.
Thank you, Danielle. And thank you for acknowledging that every patient journey is different. I think that's a really important point that you've made.
Absolutely.
I want to pivot to Arkell and ask from a patient decision perspective, from your vantage point, being a patient advocate, a healthcare leader, a podcast host, and a patient yourself, where does healthcare technology most often fail people in moments like when Danielle received her diagnosis? And why do you think that is?
Well, before I jump into that, I do want to say that, Danielle, I think what I'm most stunned by is that you're able to talk about this so early in your journey, and that takes a lot of courage. Mm. And I also think, in my opinion, that ultimately it will help make this journey easier for you because the bigger community you have, and now you have the community of this podcast, the better off that you will be. So really impressed by your courage. So technology failing, it's always two sides of the same coin, right? So in Danielle's case, she did get that pathology report before her doctor had an opportunity to speak with her. And that worked out well for Danielle, but it could also have the opposite effect on an individual. But overall, studies show that patients prefer to have their results as quickly as possible, because they are their results, not the doctor's results. We also know through data that, you know, 26% of abnormal results are missed. And so patients having access to their medical information, to their laboratory information, is a safeguard potentially against abnormal results being ignored. And so while there can be negative consequences or unintended consequences to getting results like Danielle's before you have a chance to talk about it, in general, it is good that the law requires that patients have access to their lab tests and their medical results. But where does it go wrong? Let me give you an example of a family member of mine who got her test results back. She also had breast cancer. It was about a year ago. She started chemotherapy and she checked her blood test results online and saw that her liver function tests were very elevated compared to what they had been before. She didn't know how to interpret it, and she panicked and called all of the rest of the family, but not her brother, my husband, who is a gastroenterologist, and had decided that she had metastases and she was going to die, and she fell apart. It wasn't that the chemotherapy agents affected her liver. It just was required a few dose adjustments, and she did not have those metastases that she was worried about. So you can see from the examples that it's two sides of the same coin. But if I just back up and answer the question maybe a little bit more generally, the challenge with technology, when I heard the question, I was thinking like technology, like going to Google or going to ChatGPT to say, what is this and what does it mean for me? The way that it can take a left turn in a negative way is that it's not personalized to you. So Danielle, somebody with invasive lobular breast cancer, yes, that's a cancer and it is invasive. And we, you know, there's a certain understanding, but it matters what your other medical history is, what your family history is, whether the estrogen receptors are positive or negative. I mean, all of those things matter. And so the way technology can go wrong is that it's not personalized to you, because it can't be, because you can't make 8 billion people's dearth of health information on the web.
And I went to ChatGPT, by the way. Afterwards, you know, I think a lot of patients do that. They go to ChatGPT. They're like, what does it mean? Am I going to die? What is my prognosis? You know, for me personally, that's what I wanted to know. But obviously, that history is so key. I think you raise a very good point.
And the other way that I think it can negatively affect a person's journey and their experience is that all of us don't know everything. And so patients, all of us have to recognize when we have now exceeded our limits of understanding and comprehension, and we are not the experts, and we need to start asking questions rather than trying to get answers from the internet. And that balance, I think, is really important.
I do too. And the conversation around using ChatGPT is actually very relevant right now, right? As we've been seeing articles coming out, they've just released all of their information on 2025, you know, GPT usage history and some millions, I forget the number off the top of my head now, but it's like 5% of daily chats or 5% of users daily are asking ChatGPT healthcare questions. And myself, I've done it. I have a history of back pain and a history of radiology studies. And I know that it's degenerative. So I load all of my studies in to have ChatGPT explain the trend of what's being seen across those studies. So in a way, I'm kind of trying to frame it so that it is personalized to avoid that problem that you just kind of mentioned, Arkell. But to your point, still misses the broader context of me as a human.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a whole nother like wormhole that we can go down and talk about, like personal health records and patients having ownership over their own data and knowing how to use it rather than it living with the providers, as you alluded to, Arkell. And I just love that you mentioned that patients having access to their data actually mitigates risk, you know, in terms of abnormal results being overlooked. Patients are part of the care team, right? And they have varying levels of competency, but they have a right to their data. And I envision and hope for a future where every patient has complete control over their medical history and has the tools at their disposal to interpret it and personalize it within their own context. I want to create space for Elliot to ask the next question, because our Achilles heel on this show is that we just love to talk about these really interesting topics.
We will totally nerd out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm going to turn back to you, Danielle. How did you find your friends and your family and your broader community, and how did you use technology to interact, to support, to be a part of your journey? Were there tools that you used? Was there some that worked better than others? What actually mattered when it came to having a digital connection during your patient journey?
I am definitely connected in the social media arena and, you know, have created a community family in Rochester and beyond, including at my employer too. So when I found I had cancer, after I told my kids, I knew I could not do it alone. I'm a single parent mama. And I knew that I also could not keep it inside of me, that I needed to share it for a multitude of reasons. One, for support and to rally around my little family and I. But also, I wanted to share my story in advocacy. Even at the very beginning, all I could think of was, I want to share my story so that other people will not hesitate to schedule the appointment to get checked, that they would not hesitate to go and get physical exams every year, that they do the self, you know, exams every month so they could see, you know, differences with their bodies and that sort of thing. So on December 11th, that late evening, I posted on Facebook and shared that I have cancer. And I you know, went straight to the point. I did not hide the punchline. I just said exactly what it was and that I needed support from my family and I, and that my hope with sharing would also be an advocacy of every single person that comes across my path. They don't say I'm too busy to go to the appointment. They prioritize themselves and go to the appointment. And the community rallied around me. Sarah, obviously, is also, disclaimer, she's a very good friend of mine. And immediately a meal train was established. I had food coming out of my house, busting at the seams. Every single day, there was somebody at the door.
It was like that Stregonona pasta book, you know, where the pasta pot.
It really was.
Stregonona.
I could not believe the amount of love that was shown. And it was through being able to connect on social media and let the world know, hi, I'm in crisis right now. I don't know what to do and I need your help. And people rallied around my family and I. I also used Caring Bridge to chronicleize my journey. I did that because not everybody is on my Facebook, right? Like we all have our personal Facebooks and then we have our public interfacing, you know, pages. But I thought, you know, I wanted people to also that may know of me or maybe they hear about my story, want to learn more and also, you know, be an advocate for their own health. So I did chronicleize that journey and, you know, went on a local TV station to share about my journey as well and advocacy of, you know, that early detection, really not hesitating and going to get checked out. So a lot of pathways I also share on LinkedIn. I mean, I was gone for 9 months. And a lot of my colleagues initially did not know what had happened. And I wanted to share my journey because not only am I an employee at Mayo Clinic, but now I'm on the other side. I'm a patient now. And I wanted people to be able to see what that journey looked like as a patient, because I did use that as a learning experience to better understand employees' experiences from a patient lens.
I think it's a testament to what a wonderful person you are, Danielle, and the kindness that's being repaid to you, you gave to the community tenfold, right? I didn't even hear about your diagnosis on Facebook. I had individuals reaching out to me through text asking, had I heard the news? And then I got on Facebook, you know, so people love you, people value you, and people showed up for you because you always show up for them. So I want to thank you for that. I've just realized that the way we kind of structured the questions, I'm going to end up speaking mostly to Raquel, but that wasn't by design. So I actually see that Elliot's trying to like ask me if I want to make a pivot here. I think let's just roll with it. It's late in the evening and I'm low on caffeine, if y'all are okay with that. But I do want to ask Raquel a little bit about consumer empowerment. You've spent your career helping people make better health decisions for themselves. What digital tools do you feel genuinely help patients speak up? And which ones maybe are just noise or kind of create a false sense of confidence in the market?
Well, I think that just to transition smoothly from what Danielle was talking about, I think that using the internet as a way to find support, the first thing you said you did was that you went onto Facebook and you found some support groups. That is a really important thing to do and very powerful, because all of care is not limited to the clinical decisions that you have to make about care. It's about food and nutrition and maybe transportation and just understanding sort of how to navigate life, which is not necessarily medical, that you can find out from a support group. So peer support that has become so much easier through the internet is digital and digital technologies is really great. And then the other one I do, in full disclosure, was formerly on the board of Caring Bridge. So really proud of that organization and so glad that you used it, because it allows you to share your story once and you don't have to keep repeating all of the details. And it's so confidential that putting your information on Caring Bridge doesn't give Silicon Valley all of your medical data, right? So it's that's another really, really great tool to use as well. Using your healthcare portal, both on the insurance side as well as your health system side, I think is critically important to be able to be really literate in how to navigate, because it tracks and trends your laboratory results and your vital signs and your doctor's notes. And so arming yourself with that information gives you insight into what to ask at your next doctor's appointment, what to expect, Otherwise, if you don't have access to it and it's all invisible, you don't really have a good sense of the course of your own condition. So again, you've done everything right, Danielle. You've done absolutely everything right. Where I think that digital tools can go awry is where things like remote monitoring technology, and I'm just going to do the most common one, which is, of course, an Apple Watch or any of the others, you know, that are so ubiquitous out there. I have an Apple Watch. So in full disclosure, I think they're wonderful. I think they're great tools. However, the risk with using some technologies like that is that we rely so much on and trust the data from the technology that we're not listening to ourselves. So let me give you an example. You may have, I don't know what kind of treatment you received for your breast cancer, but let's just assume that there was something that may have affected your heart or put you at risk for having a fever, which could also increase your heart rate, whatever the case may be. I've seen too many situations where the data from the watch said, you're fine, or didn't pick up anything abnormal. The individual knew that they weren't feeling right, but the watch said they were okay. And they, you know, well, should I call the doctor? But the watch says I'm okay. So to summarize, I think we need, no matter what technology we use, we need to always remember that you treat the patient, not the technology. It just augments as a tool. It is not the diagnostician. It is just giving us an extra data point. When we don't use it like that, that's when I think it can go wrong.
That's interesting. I wonder if the opposite holds true, Arkell, where the technology, like an RPM kind of technology, like a watch or something like that, is telling you that you're not fine, and you are. And then you end up overusing healthcare or overburdening clinicians with, this is going to sound terrible, but noise, right? Like, I feel fine, but my watch is telling me that I'm having a heart attack.
I have to address that, and I'm going to assume that the banter is okay here.
Of course.
So there is no watch that will tell you that you're having a heart attack, right?
Well, right. Sure. Right.
But people will interpret it that way. And right. So it's that interpretation that becomes the problem.
Right.
Right. Let's take another example. Your watch, well, it sort of goes back to what I was referencing before. Your watch can tell you whether you have atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it will diagnose every single irregular rhythm, just atrial fibrillation. And so if you're feeling an abnormal heart rate, but your watch says you don't have AFib, you might not have AFib, but you may have something else going on. Mm-hmm. But going back to what you were saying, I think the risk of saying, oh my goodness, my watch says something is wrong, are with some of the metrics that aren't clinically relevant. Heart rate variability. Some people may argue with me. We just don't know enough about heart rate variability to know when to pay attention to it or not. This is very public. I had one of the anchors on KSTP, which is where I do a lot of television. We had a whole segment on TV about the fact that she had a very low heart rate variability, and she thought that she was really sick and was going to end up, you know, in the hospital. And our segment focused around me saying to her publicly, like, calm down. It's not relevant. It doesn't mean anything. So I think the panic around abnormal results is coming from features that are on these devices that I wish were not on those devices at all.
And when you receive a serious diagnosis, that anxiety may increase as well. So one, you do become very in tune to your body. I think that is key. But scan anxiety exists, you know, really being conscientious of kind of those results. What does this mean? And then trying to interpret some of those metrics or even the results, you know, where people are going to ChatGPT to try to discern, you know, those sorts of things. So I think you raise, Arkell, a very good point. I also think it's key that, you know, patients like myself practice the pause. And they make sure they engage the provider so that they can better understand, you know, what exactly is relevant, how to interpret some of the results, what's helpful, but what may not be when it comes to technology too.
I need to practice the pause in many areas of my life, Danielle. Maybe you can teach me a thing or two about that.
I can teach you. I'm
sure bedtime for kids. Yeah. I wonder too if there's this constant, you know, barrage of health data that's coming at consumers these days. And Daniel, you're absolutely right. Like when you have a diagnosis, you're moving through that journey, your awareness and the amount of data that you're consuming just goes way up, which impacts your mental health, right? But even just for the average patient in America or across the globe, there's a lot more information that we're consuming and digesting and trying to figure out. It's kind of like before 24/7 news, we weren't that stressed out about what was going on in the world. And now we have all this information coming at us, right? And it's, you actually have to go on a news diet so that you don't, you know, have an impact on your mental health on occasion. And I wonder if the same effect may be happening in the healthcare space for certain patients who are just really in tune to all the wearables, as you're mentioning, Arkell, and they're just constantly trying to figure out what's happening inside their body.
The dark side of the quantified self.
Is that your memoir, Elliot?
I like that.
I love you so much. You know, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Is that your memoir? Craft.
It's with my publisher.
There you go. Let me know when time
is. Yeah. Tom is my husband, by the way. Just Danielle's written Arkell, just so you know that. So it's funny. You get to talk to Arkell, Sarah, but I get to talk to Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
So Danielle, I have a question for you next. So it's very clear from this conversation, I've known you all of 30 minutes, and it is very clear that you are someone who lives and breathes kindness. And tying it back to our technology here, so what's something that tech designers consistently underestimate about the emotional reality of being a patient? How can you intentionally build kindness into design, I guess, is the real question I'm asking.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It's something that I'm reflecting on as I have transitioned back to work the last few months. And what can I do differently now that I've experienced cancer and the post effects of that? I mean, I'm still on, you know, post treatment cancer medications now for, you know, reducing the chance of recurrence. And I think the biggest part of it when we're thinking about AI, automation, how do we alleviate the administrative burden off of our, you know, care team so they could really focus on kind of that interfacing and interactions with the patients. That is key, is that time spent with the patient, but also the communication should always have a human connection and component to it. And that's what I was alluding to at the very beginning. You know, even with the results, you know, and having a sheet that gives you those results, maybe some consideration around how that lands, you know, consideration around how that report is put together and what is communicated in that report with that as well. I will say what I really appreciated about my journey was there were assessments that were given to me so that I could take and let them know, hey, am I financially in crisis because of this, right? Am I overwhelmed and stressed out? Am I, you know, depressed and those sorts of things, which I think those assessments were really key because they were able to really respond to my needs, especially related to the stress part. I was incredibly stressed out. I had not spiraled into depression or anything like that yet, but I was really overwhelmed with the diagnosis. What do I do about my job? I've never not worked. I've always worked. Like, what do I do? You know, and what about my kids? And so it was really focused on kind of that dynamic. And what was incredible was this all forced me to stop and pause and be able to focus on what do I need? So with those assessments came, you know, my care team saying, hey, we're going to line you up with a psychologist oncology so that we can really better understand where you're at and what do you need? I thought that that was absolutely a phenomenal resource. And when I went in there, I did not talk about the cancer. Mm-mm. What did I talk about? What do I do with myself while I'm off work? And I had not yet, you know, received the cancer treatment yet. You know, it was like 2 weeks or so down the line. Obviously, I was going to be tired from the chemo and, you know, and surgery and radiation later. And the other topic was, what about my kids? How do I support my kids? How do I get them through this? And that's basically what I discussed the entire time when I was receiving that support. So I think the assessment tools were really key. It really was able to just get a pulse check on where I was mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, all of that. And then the responsiveness and making sure I had the resources needed, for sure. Well, think about kindness. It's not Minnesota nice, right? It's not, you know, just observing and being like, okay, you got cancer, you're not feeling good, right? No, kindness is really understanding the whole person and making sure they're cared for.
Yeah. And I'm so pleased to hear that those assessments that were delivered to you, I'm assuming electronically, like through your portal, that they were, action was taken. Someone used that data that you provided. It informed your care journey and it informed the resources and the team members that were, you know, that surrounded you and supported you. That sounds really phenomenal. Yeah. And thank you for kind of putting a bow on that, that really kindness in healthcare technology design is about designing for the whole person and how that diagnostic odyssey that they're on is impacting other areas of their life, right? It's not just their health, but it's their profession, it's their family, it's their community, et cetera, their identity, their spirituality.
All of their context. It's all of their context, Sarah, as we've talked about on this podcast.
You're right.
About design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Capability, motivation, and context. So I'm going to have Arkell, I'm going to have you kick off the final question here, and then we'll give Danielle an opportunity to kind of throw in her perspective as well. We like to end the show with a little call to action and have our guests share something that kind of really revs up our listeners and gets them motivated to get out there and make a difference. So if patient voices are the missing ingredient in healthcare technology, we're just going to operate on that assumption here. Okay. I think we can all agree that that is likely the case. What's one thing that our listeners who are healthcare executives, software engineers, decision makers at health organizations, what's one thing that these listeners should do differently starting tomorrow if we know that patient voices are the missing ingredient in healthcare tech?
There is no question what my answer is to that question. And it is that every healthcare executive, clinician that may be listening needs to accept that patients are equal partners in their care.
Say it again for the back of the house.
Patients are equal partners in their care. What does that mean? It means that clinicians are absolutely experts in with the education that they have, with the diagnostics, with the tests, with the interpretation. Wonderful. And patients are experts in themselves. Their preferences, priorities, their values. And the only way that you can get a treatment plan that works for an individual is if you combine the clinical expertise with the personal expertise. And that absolutely requires that you listen and that you respect the knowledge and equal partnership of the patient.
That's kind of a mic drop moment there. But I am confident that Danielle is going to follow up with an equally impactful perspective.
Wow.
You know, just a tall order there, okay?
Gee, no pressure.
Arkell, you're incredible. Thank you for, and what I'm about to say to you, I think is really key for what I'm hoping to convey to kind of capture what you've conveyed, which at the very beginning of this podcast, when I shared my story, you saw me, right? And you immediately saw me as a person and a human being. And that is what our listeners need to not lose sight of. Don't get so busy in the busy that you lose sight of what matters the most. And that is the patient. The patient should be at the very center. And kindness is the only way that you never lose sight of that. I have been so honored and grateful that in every moment in my path, there's been a kind and compassionate provider and nurse and desk assistant and operator and appointment coordinator and, you know, so many people that have lifted me up along the way and saw me as a human being. And I think that that's what matters the most.
Hashtag machines make care more human is what we try to strive for here. Thank you both for joining us today. We can't thank you enough, Danielle, for sharing your story and Arkell, your expertise in this area. This was a real treat for us to bring the patient journey and patient advocacy to our listeners.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for joining. And I would like to challenge our listeners to check out Speak Up for Your Health, Arkell's podcast. And to honor Danielle, if you would please make sure that you encourage your loved ones and you yourself get your breast screenings completed and pay it forward, pay that kindness forward in Danielle's spirit. Please just engage in random acts of kindness wherever you go, because then you will be sharing her love in your community as well. So thank you so much for tuning in.
And we'll be back in just a moment. Tech It to the Limit is brought to you by SimClin Digital Twin. If you're a healthcare IT leader, you already know the truth. You don't have a testing problem. You have a time and attention problem. You're in a command center. Something's broken. Something else is about to break. And someone just asked, did we run regression testing on this? SimClin Digital Twin creates digital twins of your patients, clinicians, workflows, and systems, then runs your real-world scenarios while you're busy doing the work that actually matters. Your digital patients forget passwords. Your digital nurses multitask heroically. Your digital physicians experience alert fatigue because when everything is urgent, nothing is. When you're resolving incidents, SimClin is quietly running regression tests, replaying clinical and operational scenarios, capturing screenshots and logs, and automatically documenting everything so you don't have to. That means when leadership asks, are we confident in this release? You don't guess. You answer with evidence. And because SimClin knows the Tech It to the Limit audience is already stretched thin, podcast listeners get early pilot access and preferred pricing when you mention our show, so you can prove value before committing your team's time or sanity. SimClin Digital Twin works across EHRs, virtual care platforms, smart hospital systems, integrations, and vendors who swear their update was low impact. It doesn't get distracted, it doesn't burn out, and it never says, let's just test it in production. SimClin Digital Twin, testing that keeps up with reality. Hey, welcome back to Tech It to the Limit, listeners. Thanks for joining us once again on this, the end of this episode. That was a fabulous conversation that we just had with Arkell and Danielle. What two incredible women joining us for that conversation today, Sarah. But I got to tell you, all that conversing, all that brain power kind of made me a little hungry. How about you?
Yeah, I'm up for some nugs if you are.
Yeah.
Wise nugs, that is.
So spin me up a plate of fresh wisdom nuggets.
All right. I've got two nugs to throw at you, one per guest here. I want to start with Danielle. I appreciate that she shared that social media, specifically Facebook, LinkedIn, actually had a very positive impact on her care journey when she decided to kind of go public with the news that she was, you know, diagnosed with breast cancer, and that she, you know, made this sort of conscious decision to be very, very open with the community about what she was going through, and that it, you know, was social media at its finest, at least in her case, where the community really rallied and responded, and she had incredible traction on support for her and her family, whether it be through meals or caring bridge engagements. There were even some fundraising efforts for her and her girls. So it was a very great example of how this sort of tangential technology that's not this sort of healthcare ecosystem adjacent can actually be very impactful in the patient journey. But as we talked about on the show, there's kind of two sides to every coin, you know, whether it be a portal or social media. And as you and I know, as many of our listeners know, social media is not like this, like, amazing, angelic panacea to all of humanity's problems. And it can also be a force for very negative experiences and evil acts, right? So I just want to acknowledge that.
And if I could just be cynical for like half a second, right?
Okay, I'm going to time you.
Like 4 hours later. I have to wonder, because we experienced this in our household with like purchasing gifts and, you know, I'm seeing my search history, you know, present itself as ads for my husband. So I'm just kind of like, if I think about it from a cynical mindset, when it comes to sharing a story so personal like that out on social media, my immediate thought goes to, I wonder what kind of advertisements were personalized to Danielle as part of that experience. And so we have to be mindful also in our consumer side, not just our healthcare side, when we're designing things, to be respectful and kind. That's all I was going to say.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I don't think it was cynical. I think it was a very real lens. and not one that gets talked about very often enough in this space. So thank you. My second nugget is, you know, very concise, but it kind of goes with Arkell's style. She's so succinct and clear in her communication. And that comes from years and years of sort of building her wisdom in this space and patient advocacy. I appreciate that she reminded us that we need to combine clinical expertise with patient expertise, and that patients are experts in themselves, in their value systems, in their personal preferences and their fears and their desires, and that we have to, as care teams and as designers of systems, really prioritize listening to patients at every stage of our work. And I don't think it's enough to just create space for that human conversation in the diagnostic encounter. We need to be thinking about creating space for patient voices in the design room as well, when we're thinking about designing these experiences as part of an overall journey that patients are on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with her more. And you're right, she does have a very poignant and in its brevity, the way that she explains things. Well, those were tasty nuggets.
They were very tasty. What about you? I know you're hungry too. What do you got for us?
A little bit. I got a small little plate here, just a couple, like you, one from each of our guests here. The first one was related to Danielle's story about how technology allowed her to fall apart, she said. Having her results so quickly from her pathology report and seeing that gave her a private moment for her to break down, so that she could, you know, face the next part of her journey with bravery, right? Mm-hmm. One can't be brave if one is not scared, right? And so I think there was this moment where technology enabled a very human catharsis. I think that's very powerful, and we should be seeking ways for technology to do that as part of our design. I think it was maybe very serendipitous that this happened for her. As we talked about, later as we continued the conversation, right? That's not everybody's patient's experience, but overwhelmingly, and the literature shows that patients want to receive their results. But we did talk about how that can have the opposite of effect on an individual, where they can send them into a spiral. For her, it was a very beautiful thing. So let's remove the serendipity and focus more on intentionality in those designs.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you. Great call to action. What else?
Second one came from Arkell when we were talking about, you know, what is the most useful digital tool for patients to advocate for themselves. One of the things she said right away is one of the most powerful is the portal. Use your portal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Danielle did. That's exactly what she did, right? So mm-hmm. I found something. I immediately reached out through my portal to my provider, and look how fast she had a booked appointment. She advocated herself through this tool. So we rag on patient portals a lot on this show. I think half of our commercials have some kind of making fun of a patient portal, but it truly can be a very powerful tool if you use it for your own patient advocacy. I'm going to go back to my cynical mind, right, a little bit, right? Because Arkell mentioned, you know, use your insurance portal, use your provider portal. And I'm sitting here going, oh, why does there need to be more than one portal?
Right.
Why are they two mm-hmm. different things?
Yeah.
So we just need one portal to rule them all and help Frodo get back.
One portal to bind them. Yeah.
So that was my second note.
Yeah, I think the only way that's going to happen is if we have providers dominate the scape, if you know what I mean. But maybe we'll wake up tomorrow and utopia will have arrived.
Maybe Amazon becomes the provider and...
Ooh, and that's not utopia, that's dystopia. It's like, you know, you're having one of those dreams and you're like, wait, is this a good one or a bad one? I don't know yet, you know? Yeah. Anyway, those are great nuggets. Did you have anything else?
So Danielle kind of talked about with her recommendation for the patient to practice the pause. And I just mm-hmm. want to reiterate that. We talked mm-hmm. about it a few times during the conversation, is to practice the pause. One of my goals, I'm looking this way because it's written on my whiteboard, right? One of my goals for the year is to slow down.
All right.
Slow.
That bows well for me, listeners.
And so I just want to reiterate that, take a pause, collect yourself. And then for me, the next step is move with intentionality. And so that was my bonus nug.
Love it. A little bit of moment of zen there at the end of our nuggets. Well, listeners, this concludes the very first episode of season 4 of Tech to the Limit. thank you for sticking with us for what has been a really, really amazing journey for Elliot and I. Looking forward to bringing you more great content this season. If you want to be the first to hear about it, follow us on LinkedIn. Leave us a review wherever you pod. Tell a friend. Tell a frenemy. Tell someone on the bus. Just tell someone, please, about anyone that you can stream Tech It to the Limit anywhere that you pod. Elliot, will you please send us off with our first health tech haiku of the season?
There's nothing I would rather do more. Here we go. Ready? Health tech hums loudly, but the patient voice whispers, "Design begins here."
It's like you're a beat poet in a cafe or something, and it's like desperately, yes, there we go. All right.
Well, thanks, listeners. We'll see you next time on Tech It to the Limit.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.